Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our semi-regular Tuesday stream, question mark?
Yes. Hello, yes. Fellow Patriots.
Fellow Patriots, we need you to send $15 to this Bitcoin address.
So you can save Nigel Farage's bank account right now.
And the Tory Party, and GB News. No, we are indeed live.
I think more importantly.
Yes.
We're back.
Yes. We are indeed back, and we are indeed live. There is no stopping us.
No.
There's been a few things, I guess, going on. I know people kind of noticed our slight exasperation, but don't worry, I'm not going to go through the angry arc. We'll try and stay as jovial and kind of level-headed as usual.
Oh, yes, of course.
And in that spirit, I'd like to report on the weather. It's raining. It will not stop raining. I'm worried about my outdoor plant.
It's quite cold.
It's cold and rainy. It's November in England. Oh, no.
November in England.
Yeah. It very much is November rain. But if you guys do want to support us, we are still monetized somehow.
Someone in it. Maybe that's where our video views for the last stream came, if it turns out Dellingpole had shared on his Telegram.
Oh, right.
However, I can't see Dellingpole's Telegram because it's some sort of weird private group you have to be invited to. So, Mr. Dellingpole, if you're watching us, get in touch.
Tapping our nose there. Maybe not the best thing to do in the current climate. But if you guys want to donate, the best way to do it is through the coffee link. I've just put it on screen there. I won't go through our shilling stuff too much on air.
There's the YouTube. There's the Substack.
You can be members
of these things if you want to support us on a regular basis. Or there's the Super Chats. We, as you said, probably suggested there, probably won't push these as hard as we have been in the previous sort of run-up because we can't really guarantee we'll be making things as regularly as we were before, but
we're trying. We're trying our best. There is stuff still going up on the Substack. If you want these as audio podcasts, if you hate YouTube, because you know our boy I do sometimes, and you want an ad-free audio podcast, please do feel free to subscribe on the Substack. But that is the extent of our shilling today. We're talking about a fact. If everyone will stop grunching all over the stream. Rather inappropriately.
Sorry. We do always do these about an hour after dinner. What else are you going to get?
Yes, but anyway, we're talking about a subject near and dear to our hearts. We're probably going to do this at some point anyway,
honestly.
We were planning to do this. This is not in relation to just, like, anyone, really. These are general facts. We're talking about general stuff. This isn't some sort of, like, counter-stream, reaction stream, or drama stream. We'll be talking about this in general terms because I hear this point a lot, and I mean a lot, in the normie sphere and in kind of the edges of the political sphere, in the Farage sphere especially.
Yes. Oh, we're going to join the new conservatives or the Bloomsbury group or whatever new culture forum is going to rejuvenate the Tory party or the European, you know, whatever one of these hacked on groups that exists as part of the Tory octopus says it's going to do. Itself forward as some new edgy way to bring the Conservative Party somehow into the 21st century, but also out of it, and all those other things you hear. And why?
Yes.
All of those people are either sending you down a false path or completely wrong.
Well, I'd say that they are mostly completely wrong. But...
And we sort of have at least a few cases sort of to prove why that case. Wrong, and I think we can start maybe with one of the most important, prevalent, at least to us, instances of people being involved in the Conservative Party and learning how it actually worked.
Yes, we unfortunately it's the one bit of the speech Q&A that wasn't recorded, but we have a bit of a transcript of a Q&A in 2009 with Jonathan Bowden from jonathanbowden.org. Thank you to the people who archive all this stuff. We'll be starting from kind of the middle of this one, but he's been asked a question about the fact that he was part of the Conservative Party for a while and how he felt about that, basically. He said, one thing I've noticed about that type of conservatism, though, is, as Ravello P. Oliver, which is once said, conservatism is not enough. And the problem with it is manifold. In the British tradition in particular, it is very philistine, it is very anti-intellectual, it is very atheoretical, it is pragmatic, which is true. We often talk about conservatism having no political theory, really. It's also quite afraid. It's afraid of the doctrine of respectability. Tories are obsessed with being respectable, obsessed with being thought of as nice. It is of no moment, as far as I am concerned. They've got a fear of the disapproval of their bourgeois peers, which is semi-traumatic.
The centre-left would always use the ideas of the extreme left, even if it repudiates the politics. You can repudiate Leninism and the ideas of utter ruthlessness, and the ends justify the means. And yet, at the same time, you can believe in radical socialist postulates, whereas the modern right is terrified. Libertarianism aside, from using the ideas of the radical right, I think it's its great weakness that it won't even accept the ideas that would allow one to fight back. That's why they've been completely outmaneuvered and virtually culturally destroyed. What's left of intellectual conservatism now is almost done. Michael Oakeshott and these sorts of people are a distant memory. Professor Maurice Cowling is dead. Scruton has partly fallen silent, at least in terms of media exposure in comparison to when he was younger. See, if you confront this society now as a radical conservative, if such a thing is possible, you would have to use radical right ideas. And they won't go there. Touch them. And they're deeply frightened, even if they put it in the form of Guillaume Fay, Alan de Benoist, or Benoist, or that, or whatever. Even that is too...
Alan de Benoist, yes. Yeah. What will inevitably follow is that certainly the realm with ideas they've got now, sorry, in a confused way, just sort of collapse into a general liberal slough. And more radical forces will have to represent the sorts of views that have expected them to uphold in the past. Very deliberate. But maybe it was always a fallacy to believe they would uphold them. And it's just the first bit here. Another question he's asked is, why have they not fought back? Why have they had this problem with not accepting the ideas of the radical right and using them? Jonathan Bowden answers, too conformist, too bourgeois, too afraid. I'm not going to disrespect the man by doing a Jonathan Bowden impression, by the way. Too unintellectual, too snobbish, too materially comfortable. That's a great answer, especially that last part. All of those sorts of views. Different for each individual within the spectrum, of course. Somebody else will always do it. Reversing many of the processes of decline will involve roughness and a degree of possible nastiness. Such politics will inevitably involve the working class and involve a large swathe of the population that would rather not associate with and politicise in relation to. You're talking about the Tory party there, that they don't want to associate with the working class and they certainly don't want to politicise them towards action because that becomes uncontrollable very quickly. I actually cover this. I don't use this quote, but I cover this point in my... What was my pitch to the Witan in 2022 called Pub Praxis, Demystifying Dissident Action? But anyway, I digress. The whole point of much of their politics is, in a sense, to keep that group out of the political process to a degree. Therefore, to deal with the decline on their watch involves such radical reshaping of one's mind, in a way, they are not up for it.
Yes. And Jonathan Bowden was by no means the first person to ever work this out.
No.
I mean, if some of the people that were following me through the earlier on part of the year when I was reading some of the works of the neo-Tories from 19 right through the 30s, that was a varying group of people over the course of two and about a decade, tried to use every single element of influence they could through publishing, universities, finance, through military connections, through connections in trade and unions, anything that they could come across, try and influence the Tory party not to go to war with Germany.
Yeah.
Not to go and support communist Spain against Franco. And every single one of those operations failed. And the people that worked their fingers to the bone, put their hearts in their sleeves, and, you know, basically got down their knees in front of these lords and MPs, look, for the sake of our own people, do not do this. They were then used as ammunition for reasons why we should do this, because these people are hateful fascists.
Not to go off on too much of a tangent, but we had an almost similar experience where we ended up having, really just before the Ukraine stuff kicked off, that discussion we had with Alexander Dugin, in which he was appealing to... I think there's still an archive of it online. Because he shouldn't have recorded it, but he did. So you can listen to us ask some questions of Alexander Dugin, which is a bit odd. But he was kind of beseeching the British biospirit in a way,
yes.
Talking about the dragon and the lion, and he doesn't mention the unicorn, like you said. But that was a very odd situation. Unfortunately, things were better. Even in the 1930s, there was open lines of communication. What I've found really is there are no open lines of communication anymore.
No.
There's been a lot of closing off, and with the hegemony that happens, it's not possible to have even the degree of disquiet there was before the war. But I don't want to get too much into our historical revisionism stuff, because that's not the subject of this stream.
But we know, for one reason or another, there is one way to a communication in us and these people, and it's that they watch what we do very carefully. And sometimes they even take on elements of what we say, purely and simply because they know that they have to, otherwise the energy would be sucked right out of them. And as you're about to put forward here, the first another sort of example of this in a more contemporary sense, they use things like based Boris. And obviously we'll go into a bit more detail here with this, but it's just very simple. Boris was used as this figure that was meant to go hark back to Blighty and a bit Churchillian and a bit eccentric, but also he said, you know, women that wear burqas look like post boxes. He's totally racist and based and stuff. And of all the things that he brought to the Conservative Party, that wasn't just technocracy, that wasn't just climate change, wasn't just more immigration, it was culture war nonsense that's valueless.
Yes.
And as we discussed last week, it was that furthering of the same sort of project that Nigel Farage seemed to dip his toe in all the way back in Brexit. And that Boris didn't have a prime ministerial run. He was a president. He was a head of state. And he had to be a character. And
yes.
Because he was that character, he had to make all these statements about culture and how the loony left have lost their marbles and all this kind of stuff. We know, and we understand fully now, is a valueless conversation. culture war garbage.
I see you there, Ivan Grozny and John Morton. Thank you to our members. John Morton says, to be fair, Bojo was Churchillian. Quite the accusation.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to be Churchillian after what Churchill did to this country. I know you wouldn't. But the reason we're talking about this first is because, well, we already did this. Boris Johnson was supposed to be the person that took over the Tory party as a Brexiteer. He was sold as somebody who was bringing UKIP to take over the Tory party. He was vesting power in basically the dissident side,
the
in quotes.
Benchers the backbenchers like Mogg.
The backbenchers like Mogg. And he was bolstered not just by the right-wing press, but also by the left-wing press.
Yes.
We were told in no uncertain terms that Boris Johnson was some kind of fascist. Here, we use open democracy quite a lot because they're some of the people who have some of the best distilled narrative that they tell the leftists. They're very good at being on message for what leftists are supposed to believe and what right-wingers are supposed to react to as, well, they hate it, so we like it.
Yes.
Why the radical right relishes Boris Johnson's prime minister? It seems so silly now. Johnson's success in the Conservative Party leadership election is based upon undeliverable or potentially disastrous promises, either of which will only increase the Brexit Party surge, which never really happened.
No.
Because, as we know, it all got detonated in the end. But here's another one. Traitors, betrayal, surrender, British politics now dripping with terms that fuel division. If you remember the whole traitors parliament, if you remember the fact that he was marketed not only as somebody who was, you know, a Brexiteer, he was taking over the Conservative Party, he was conquering the West, conquering the traitors parliament. He was supposed to be a Hail Mary throw.
Wait, we were meant to celebrate this as a hard right victory.
Yes, and you will remember that I was guilty of some of it myself, I will say, up until I regained my senses and remembered, as we'll get into, that Boris Johnson as Mayor of London was a completely different politician.
Of course.
With a completely different set of ideas. But there was this really intense current moment, like we had the very intense current moment around Brexit, and then we had the very intense current moment about saving Brexit, and right now we have the very intense current moment about the Middle East again. But within the fever dream of 2019, Boris was the candidate. You know, people in the alternative politics
bonkers,
sphere.
Bonkers, Britain, Boris, fascists, lefties, leftist numpties, beaten blah, 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 whatever.
Boris Johnson is also a pillar of bringing about New Britain. There's no New Britain without Bojo. No. Bonkers Boris, Bojo, New Britain, Stormzy, Britain, Doctor Who. it's New Britain, guys. Sorry, I can see the... that's enough, New Britain. I grow tired of you, New Britain. I want old Britain back.
But yeah, there was even the slightest sort of idea about a friend-enemy going on here.
Yes.
That Boris Johnson had enemies on the left and he was going to tackle them. Sorry, I would continue there, but I'm trying. I'm going to get another one.
Good old base Boris. Well, there was never quite an electoral pact because they didn't need one, but there were rumours of the fact that UKIP was going to have an electoral pact with Boris Johnson in the general election. This was back in 2017. There was this endorsement once Farage quit as a leader of UKIP and then resigned in a spat in 2018, as we'll get to when we cover him, because he is quite a vital part of this story too, about why you can't take over the Tory party. All these people were not only folded back into the Tory party nominally, because UKIP lost its momentum, they were folded in literally, because yes. UKIP told people to go and vote for the Tories.
Well, you think as well, all the energy built up by you in the 2 or 3 years prior, and this is, I think, actually a very important point to consider, all those resources that weren't, you know, let's say UKIP at the time is independent of the Tory party.
Yes.
It points towards its own goals.
Yes.
It uses its own resources, its own messaging for its own intentions.
Yes.
It does this for 2 or 3 years, builds up a backing, spends all these resources, all that time, all that energy doing all of this. And what is the end product?
Folding back into the Conservative, but rejuvenating.
All that energy, all those resources. And that just save the Tory party.
Unfortunately, that is anyone who is an alternative politics person like Farage who tells you, I'm going to infiltrate the Tory party, isn't trying to destroy the Tory party, he's trying to save it.
Yes. I think we'll give it a moment before we get back round to that point, because we'll stick with the internal story within the party.
Yes. So
but obviously this is an indication, even when these people are knowingly sold to us as based candidates, that more often than not, they are someone who's already been chosen because he will do certain things that other people won't, like cancel Christmas.
Here we are, a year later, a year after the 80-seat majority. This is a year into Boris Johnson's premiership. And this is the famous cancel Christmas. There was Eat Out to Help Out. There was, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You all remember it. Maybe you don't. Amnesia seems to have descended on the people.
Sorry, I had to find that comment in chat quite funny. I used to always go out for a bike ride on Thursday evenings when everyone was about banging their pots and pans. I'd wave at them like I was Bradley Wiggins.
we'll get to that in a sec. We'll get to Farage's reaction to lockdowns as well. Because
Paul B's zooming past these bikes. Toured the bloody France.
But this, everybody went mission accomplished. We've saved Brexit. We've elected Boris. Boris has taken over the Tory party. Brexiteers.
They're going to go back.
Patriots.
Lefties are going to go back in their box. The biscuit tins will be back out. The Churchill statues will be finer than ever. But no, what we actually got was a globalist takeover of our nation and the infection of tens of millions of people with a deadly vaccine.
I always liked the fact that people, the lockdowns were really naff. It was incredibly pound shop. It was incredibly like sillet bang. It was the infomercial of like blue beam operations. Because lockdowns, the multi, you know, flu variant virus lockdown stuff is mentioned in like the blue beam documents. It's one of the options to basically, all right, shut it down, new political paradigm. It is part of their toolbox. And it was absolute insanity, but Boris Johnson was the architect of that. He was Mr. Lockdown. Well, he wasn't Mr. Vaccine.
He wasn't the architect. He was the salesman.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, though. He was... Well, if you believe the system is... Yeah, he was the salesman for that, sorry. He was somebody whose premiership was defined by it, to the point where still having things like the COVID.
And let's not forget, the people who were actually designing the elements of policy, people like that really based guy, Dominic Cummings.
Yes.
Who were actually responsible for some of the really evil parts of that whole fucking shit.
Anyway, what else do we got? We got in the last year, in 2022, of Boris Johnson's premiership, 1.4 million visas.
Yeah.
More than doubling of the previous year and the highest visa total in British history. This is the result of trusting the plan.
Yep.
This is the result of based Boris. This is the result of thinking that you can take over the Tory party. This is where it leads.
Yeah.
You get lockdown and you get 1.4 million visas.
Yeah, and there's just someone in chat there. Brexit, best I can do is global government and lockdowns.
Yeah, basically. This is what happened. You can't have somebody who is in a political party, at the apex political party, and who is able to win a leadership competition and then not immediately be removed, as we'll see later.
Yes.
If that person goes through all those hurdles, it's a very good chance that they're a regime insider.
I mean, this is something I don't think I've actually mentioned at a point on stream yet, but it's something I was talking to you about as well. Like, step back for a moment of, you know, from the specific example of Boris Johnson. Look at the lengths even normal MPs have to go to. Main is just fear politicians do what they are told.
Yes.
They have to go through unending humiliation rituals. You have to sit there with committees of unending NGOs, demand of them this, that, and the next thing, which they have to nod and go, yes, we'll do that. You know, no matter, this is not even considering what sort of personal compromising or blackmail is maybe required to even get you to that stage.
Yes.
And there are people out there that think they can do all of that and change the system.
Yes. Well, as we get to, the idea that Boris Johnson could have been an insurgent leader is ridiculous. Whilst he was mayor of London, he bigged up his immigration amnesty policy, but even when he was campaigning for the Tory party leadership, he was still a pro-amnesty candidate in terms of immigration. This is from Free Movement. He's got a nice little picture of Boris Johnson, the brown person there.
Don't you love the language there below? Johnson, who looks set to secure victory in the Conservative leadership race, told the paper he'd supported the idea of an amnesty for those who have lived here for 15 years, so long as they have played by the rules.
In quotes.
But if they've lived here for 15 years and they aren't citizens, they haven't played by the rules.
The interview contained no further detail, with Johnson merely in was over.
Yeah, yes, but I would import 1 million people. No further questions.
Well, here's the indicator that he is not an anti-immigration candidate. If he's talking, if he's using the word amnesty and he's not shutting it down immediately, you know that this man is not your guy. But the biggest indicator, really, that he was not your guy is the fact that he was part of the same Bullingdon Club set at the same time as David Cameron. I've got a better quality version there, but there's Boris Johnson on the furthest right, sat down, and there above him is David Cameron, second from the left. There,
it's like a really terrible synth pop choir band sort of like album cover.
I'm cutting David Cameron's head off a bit there, but there we go. You can see that better. But yes, there's Boris Johnson and David Cameron at university at the same time in the same Bullingdon Club. I believe there was another picture here as well from a similar...
Who else is in this? Do they list them all?
It does list them all. You have the Honourable Edward Sebastian Grigg, the heir to Baron Altrincham of Tombriton, and current chairman of Credit Suisse.
David Cameron.
Yep.
Ralph Berry Robinson, former child actor, designer and furniture maker. Ewan Ferguson, son of the British ambassador of France. So Ewan Ferguson, now at city law firm Herbert Smith. Matthew Benson, the heir to the earldom of Weymouth and March. I thought it was Benson and Hedges' heir. I'm so disappointed. Sebastian James, son of Lord Northburn, a major landowner in Kent. Jonathan Ford, the then president of the Bullingdon Green Club, a banker with Morgan Grenfell. Boris Johnson, the then president of the Oxford, now mayor of London.
And then subsequent prime minister.
And Harry Eastwood, the investment fund consultant.
Here's the Bullingdon Club again, the same institution in 1990.
Oh, there's George Osborne.
Now the Shadow Chancellor.
Chris Coleridge, writer Harry Mount, German aristocrat and management consultant Baron Lupus von Maltzen, late Mark Petrie, the heir to the Baron of Petrie, Australian millionaire Peter Holmes, Nathan Rothschild, the heir to Baron Rothschild, and Jason Gissing, the chairman of Okada Supermarkets.
So, yes, he it was...
aren't these just the folk that are on the end of your street?
Yeah, aren't these the folk you... Well, we all, as we talk about sometimes, these are all people who, to get into the Bullingdon Club, had to be introduced to the pig.
Yes.
We don't have a pig here for you. You can use your imagination.
You can imagine the squealing.
Yes.
And the squealing of the pig.
Oh, dear. But yes, it's there are a lot of, rituals involved in getting into something like Bullingdon Club. You have to become... compromised. All of these people in this picture are compromised, and that's why they're allowed to maintain their position within the elite class.
They've done because the pork toss as opposed to salad toss.
But that is why, no matter what his policies are, someone like Boris Johnson could never be a dissident leader, because he is part of the furniture of the establishment, and he is pre-compromised.
And then, in another vein... when someone who doesn't reject the social or the cultural background of the Conservative Party and where it wants to see itself nowadays, we have the other example of someone who makes a policy misstep. Oh, sorry, you want to do this first?
Yeah, we have the next example of someone who makes a policy misstep. But for each of these, I want to do like a lessons learned. The lesson here is that establishment figures are not dissidents. The establishment ruthlessly roots out dissidents well before they can be MPs using outfits like the Bullingdon Club. Do not believe a sitting MP is capable of real dissent. They are not. And that is incredibly important to keep in mind. But that is, I think, the first and most pressing example. We already tried this. Didn't work.
Yes.
Because anyone who can maintain the leadership of the Conservative Party into prime ministerhood and survive more than a month is somebody who has been introduced. Pig. But our second example here... Oh, no, wait. Shall we first of all get Nigel Farage's thoughts on the lockdown policy?
Yes, I suppose we should. I'm sure Paul B from chat will zoom past on his bike anymore. Fucking.
What an absolute ditty. But the second example of why you can't take over the Tory party is the removal of Liz Truss. Liz Truss is not someone who was a dissident. She is somebody who was an idiot.
What do you mean? When she was Women and Equality Secretary, she put in Matthew Goodwin. So she must be a dissident.
Oh yeah, Matthew Goodwin was appointed to the Women and Equalities Commission by Liz Truss. She can't be all bad. Based anti-radicalisation network, Matt Goodwin. Based Chatham House, Matt Goodwin. But the second example is just the removal of Liz Truss. A lot of people, yes. Can we get some cheeses in the chat, please? But and I will say, if you are enjoying this so far, do interact with the video. It does actually help us. I will do the whole drop a like thing, because good lord, you die without it. I'm sorry.
Yes.
It's such stupid YouTube-y stuff.
Well,
but it does actually help.
We haven't said it to our people in a while, but we would love to see their Al Gore rhythms.
Yes.
So please demonstrate your Al Gore rhythms in the comments and the chats and whatnot.
But anyway, the removal of Liz Truss is an example that people didn't really understand, because it happened so fast.
Yes.
Liz Truss came in, they said, oh no, Liz Truss, you dropped the economy. The economy got broken. The economy fell down and the money ran out. The economy men said that money go bad and Liz Truss fall down, go boom.
Yes.
Those were the headlines.
I mean, there are parts of this, of course, that we will never know.
No.
I also partially believe that they are...
areas.
For the
big quasi-quatang.
For the same reason they keep Rishi Sunak there just now, is the same reason he was only there for a couple minutes.
Oh, someone's arrived. Oh, it's Liz Truss. Liz Truss is back.
That's Theresa May.
It's no, wait, that is Theresa May. I always mix them up, because they're so interchangeable. Oop-a-doop-a-doop.
Oh, hello, Liz. Hello, Mr. Quasi.
I was Prime Minister once, too. I'm Liz Truss. Ooh, I can deliver Brexit. Ooh. It's so silly. Anyway.
But no, to some extent, we will never fully understand what what went on here, or why Liz Truss was Prime Minister of Britain for all of about 9 days or whatever the fuck it was. But for one reason or another, she put in the idea of a tax cut, or someone behind her said to her, you're doing a tax cut.
Well, their big idea was they're going to lower corporation tax by like 1%, and they're going to adjust the high rate of tax to make it go from 45% to 40%. That's it.
Mm.
Those were the radical Liz Truss tax cuts that apparently crashed the UK economy. They were a total of 45 billion, the headline figure, but that was over like 10 years, isn't it stupid like that? This was a very small, what I describe as twiddling of the knobs.
Yes.
This was not an extreme like policy at all. In fact, a big old Kwasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss were really a holding pattern. They were a strange compromise candidate that came out of the leadership election that was supposed to deliver us Rishi Sunak.
And as we covered at the time, which was kind of the untold story.
Yes.
45 billion over the course of a year off the tax bill sounds like nothing. Because
that was over 5 years, 45 billion.
Because within the same week, the same couple of weeks, the Bank of England printed £65 billion of new debt to help spur the pensions back into not dying.
The argument against Liz Truss's tax cuts is that it was a time of inflationary pressure, and having rate rises and tax cuts at the same time is like having accelerated down whilst on the brake. In modern money, like in kind of traditional economics, in quotes, in regime economics, you're not supposed to do that. But the Bank of England was still producing fiduciary media to cover the gap in the pensions, and doing it to the tune of £20 billion more than the entirety of the suite of Liz Truss's tax cuts. So it's very clear that this is not a radical policy. It's certainly not radical compared to the board, the £500 billion that was borrowed to fund 1 year of the furlough scheme. And it's certainly not radical in terms of the fiduciary media that the Bank of England is willing to produce just to stop the pensions from collapsing. So it's very clear that this was an economic storm in a teacup, and she was effectively being removed by the money men, because the Bank of England came out and said it didn't like it. IMF came out and said they didn't like it. And that's another thing. The World Bank also came out and said they didn't like it. And the ratings agencies came in and said, we don't like you. We're putting your ratings down. I don't want to put all this stuff in an economic stream. But really, the global financial hegemony came together and said, you're not a dissident, Liz Truss. We know that you are a career politician who's just a bit dim. But I'm afraid that Rishi Sunak was supposed to win this race, so off you pop.
Yeah. And then next year she's going to write a book called 10 Years to Save the West.
Yeah, basically. it's the lesson here is that, well, even if you are an outsider, you will just be removed from power. Even if a non-dissident one, the money men alone can and will bring you down. They didn't even have to use a security state to get rid of Liz Truss. They just said, economy fell over, and she went, understandable, have a nice day.
Well, the IMF said, how do you like being like a B-minus rated economy as opposed to double A+?
Yeah.
And every other financial institute, the Bank of England, the pensions authorities. Yeah, what was the one we were looking at point as well? Was the Monetary Responsibility Commission or something.
Yeah, all that shit.
Which is one of these bodies that is over and above the government, all step in at once and go, you out.
Well, this is what would have happened to Boris Johnson if he was a genuine dissident.
Mm.
They don't even need to kill you these days.
No.
They can just say, no more infinite debt for you. And you go, but my economy's based on infinite debt. And that's what happened to Liz Truss.
So if you're an outsider in the party, or if you're an insider in the party with some outside policies, neither of these work. So what if you're on an outsider party?
Yes. It seems to be then that the method to taking over the Tory party would be to create a party that threatens it.
Because this is what reform is going to do now, supposedly.
Supposedly, yes. It's the same old thing that you create a party that so threatens the Tory party that they either have to absorb you or you win. And we bring ourselves on to the other example of an attempt to take over a political party, which is the death of UKIP. We're here, strap in. We're not going to be too spicy, but we are going to be a little spicy.
I might as well say it now. We would be living in a completely different world had we had UKIP race man, not UKIP rape man.
Yes, you could have been UKIP race man, but you just couldn't unite with your people. But that's where you end up. You do end up as UKIP rape man if you play the political game and you don't have the chops for it.
Yep.
That is what you become. That is how you are remembered. You know, it's I don't know what are we on, like, 7 gamer gates now? 8?
No, just close it. Shut the gamer gate, Carl.
No, Sargon. You have to close the gamer gate.
No, Sargon.
But, I mean, we might as well get to through some of the elements here as well, because there's a clip of Farage that you've got to come up with.
I have a very good clip of Farage.
Which?
Because it seems that the politics here don't really make sense. If you are trying to take over an insurgent party, you would think that somebody who has an interest in dissidents would try and support you. But at least at the time, that was not the case. Let's have a listen, shall we?
What do you make of UKIP, who are currently fielding a candidate, Carl Benjamin, who thinks it's funny to make jokes, supposedly, about raping Labour MP Jess Phillips?
Yeah, they blur him like a sex offender.
I sat here on this couch as leader of UKIP, discussing political issues. It was part of my life for 25 years. I warned them last year repeatedly, do not let the lunatic fringe, do not let the criminal fringe into the party. Piers, they ignored me. On a personal level, I feel slightly sad that it's happened. But frankly, the sooner this election's over with and UKIP closes down, the better it will be. It's gone beyond a joke.
Isn't it pretty disgusting that this person is even allowed to be putting himself up?
It's extraordinary. You know, these comments are vile.
I mean, you've been on the receiving end of a lot of vile stuff yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go.
We're not going to sit here and forward or repeat accusations or statements within that. We just want to put forward the notion that, for one reason or another, Carl's plan, and his current plan is to take over the Tory party, which we'll cover in a bit more detail towards the end. But one of the biggest figures he needs for this, and he said it himself, is backing Nigel Farage. Now, unless Nigel Farage has had some massive turnaround in opinion in the last few years, I don't think Nigel wants to be your mate.
No, I also think that it's once you level up, once you get out of the milieu, let's say, of the online politics influencers, you have to basically take a big steamy shit on those people.
Yeah.
You have to go out there and say, oh no, I'm not somebody who associates with these people. It's very in character for Mr. Farage, as we'll see when we cover him a little bit in his own regard. But this is the reality. This idea that we will just take over UKIP. I remember there was all of the memes. It was like a meme campaign.
It was good fun at the time, but
I'm sure it was.
I think we're all very much of the opinion now, because we are slightly more world weary, that any success that comes out of politics will never be fun.
No.
It will be torturous and tedious. It'll probably leave many of us with our lives in ruins.
Well, what happened again, and we've got to the point of what happened with Boris, what happened with UKIP was that they were basically used as a head on a spike. Here's Scout News, who was at Substack, who were the only people who really bothered to even cover the UKIP conference, and really just went out of their way to show how sad it was. It was smaller. 2022.
Last year.
This is 2022 UKIP conference. There was less people there than was at our last successful Nomos event. It was maybe 50 people at the UKIP conference. The headline here, desperation and drowsiness at the UKIP conference. We have hemorrhaged members.
Well, look at that second paragraph. Yeah. The theme of this year's event is the war on woke, but a more suitable topic would be coping with loss. 2016, the party conference was a news event covered by the BBC. Nigel Farage, in his final speech, predicted that the successful Brexit campaign, just a foothill on UKIP's summit to the top of British politics. The harvest of votes we could potentially get from the Labour Party hasn't even started yet, he said. Today, 50 members of UKIP fit into the function room of a country pub outside Skegness, and there are plenty of empty chairs.
The guest list barely stretches onto the second sheet of A4. There's talk of policies and history and electoral success, but the room gives off the impression of a village cricket AGM instead of a party that recently took 4 million votes in the general election. Without Farage and without Brexit, UKIP is bereft. They don't even mention him, which is, I think, like the final insult. Yeah. They don't even mention him.
So does Carl Benjamin no reference to him at all in this?
I believe there's later on about low morale and funding and talking about UKIP's problems. Few know we still exist. Few know our fantastic policies. You think that voting for us will make a difference? The racist tag.
That was the only thing they had going for them.
Yeah, I was going to say. But that UKIP has been utterly destroyed. UKIP loses all 6 seats in local elections. Those aren't like sitting MPs. Those are councillors. Mm. Those are the last 6 councillors they had left.
That's ones of tens of thousands across the country.
Yes, it is. There's tens of thousands. UKIP has been not only diminished electorally, it has been utterly destroyed. The earth has been salted, and all that time, all that energy, all that discourse, all the discussions, all the hype, all the memes,
all those millions of people who may have very well voted enthusiastically for the first time, all ended up just voting for Boris anyway.
Yes, they did. And that really is the crux of all this. That what you end up with, you end up with a demoralizing and embarrassing defeat. Attempting to overtake a peripheral political center will result in their detonation and the wasting of time, energy, and money that could be used to build something of your own. Competing within the electoral system leads to mass media smears and embarrassing, demoralizing defeat. At least 50 people sat in a room going, where did our party go? It leads to the death of anything that is not the mainstream dialectic, because you are playing by their game, you are playing by their rules, and you cannot win. We've been through what happens when somebody, quote-unquote, successfully takes over the Tory party. They turn out not to be a dissident. We've gone through what happens when somebody doesn't successfully take over the Tory party, who isn't even a dissident. They get papped out by global finance. And we've just covered what happens when you take over an insurgent political party from a genuinely non-regime position.
Yes, so I suppose we can get to the meat and bones of what this is really aimed at. And that is the fact that Carl Benjamin, in his recent speech at the Traditional Britain Group, you can go and find it on their YouTube page. There was stuff from the conference that they had early October this year. I do like the people over there and some of the stuff that they do.
Yes.
But the key part of Carl's speech was, long and short of it, we are going to use the influence of Nigel Farage. How he knows he's going to have this influence on his side, I have no idea. Either through reform or via the Tory party, or possibly both, because he's at least in agreement with us on this aspect, that they are set up for a historic defeat.
Yes.
In front of Starmer. And for the time being, I still agree with that notion as well. I think AA flip-flops on this a little bit. He'll come back round. He knows the Dark Lord is too powerful.
Yes.
So we work out the idea here. We join the Tory party in its dying days, and they come up to this election. And then when it's on its knees, when it's on its deathbed, you know, when Starmer has a 100, 120 seat majority,
yeah,
and the Conservative Party for the first time in maybe about a century, even more so than the years during Blair, looks like it might be genuinely on its arse and dying.
Yeah.
We go in and we save it.
Yeah, defibrillating the like a David Dees comic.
Yeah, and there's two really obvious problems with that. One, why would you want to save the one institution, as we covered in Bowden's little segment earlier, that seems to exist solely to keep radical right and genuinely reactionary vitalist actors, a will for the British people, out of politics.
Yes.
Why would you want to rejuvenate that? Furthermore, why would you be naive enough as to think that your rejuvenation of it would serve you?
And why do you think you can do this in public? And why do you think you can announce your plan like a supervillain monologuing?
Because I don't remember Keir Starmer getting up, you know, and we'll get more into this in a little bit. I don't remember Keir Starmer 4 years ago publicly saying, by the way, we're going to kick all the woke shit out of the Labour Party and rejuvenate it as a managerial tour de force.
No.
Neither did Blair say anything about it. But all of a sudden, one day, it happened.
It happened, yes, because the people in power wanted it. But anyway, we're not at that example yet. Do we want to talk about the delusion of Farage's The Great Man? Or do we want to save some of those clips for?
I think we should save some. Well,
we'll round off with one of them, I think, which is one we've put up as a short on this channel, which keeps getting weird, normie people watching.
Fair enough, yeah. That one has been shared around.
Who are getting very, very confused by it. But here I think, is kind of the final nail in the idea of
Nigel Farage
as the great man. Or a friend to us in general, yeah.
Let me just say this to you. Do I feel responsible for people saying extreme things? Quite the reverse. I destroyed the British National Party. Right, we had a far-right party in this country who genuinely were, you know, anti-Jew, anti-black, and all of those things. And I came along and I said to their voters, if you're holding your nose and voting for this party as a protest, don't come and vote for me. I'm not against anybody. I just want us to start putting British people first. And I almost single-handedly destroyed the far-right in British politics. That's not a bad achievement.
Right, so you don't...
Ladies and gentlemen, the saviour of the West. And that, by the way, is Jonathan Bowden's BNP party, yes, who we quoted at the beginning, and of course, who is somebody who is a tour de force. I believe this is Bowden's opinion of Farage.
Clear them out. Clear them out. You've got to clear them out. You've got to clear them out as well. There needs to be a new start.
No, he doesn't say infiltrate them. He says clear them out.
Yes, and I suppose as an interlude before we get to the end, let's say Nigel Farage was our guy.
Yes.
He did, he was going to do what he says he's going to do, he's going to deport them all, put woke fully back in the box, and revitalise British culture, this, that, and the next thing. What would actually happen in that instance?
well, the next example I have, and we'll just do it quickly because it is a bit of a, it's not a tangent, but it is the example from the US. It's just the bypassing of Trump. It's just the fact that even if you do win, even if you do survive, and even if they can't remove you, they will just survive you. That is the ultimate example of why you can't just take over a party, because Donald Trump was president of the United States for 4 years, in a nominally dissident capacity. I do not believe they brought him fully into the fold, or at least not knowingly anyway. But he was simply survived by power structure. We have here one of, I think, the most damning pieces of evidence that the levers of power lead nowhere, which is that he was just lied to about the number of troops in Syria.
Yep.
The Syrian envoy just told Trump there were no troops in Syria, and he believed them.
Well, I mean, in the similar vein as well, as we discussed, he also bombed Syria at one point.
Yes.
Despite having not wanted to do it. And then he was decried for not bombing it enough.
Yes, he was. But this is a good example. You can be president and not be in power.
Yes.
Once again, what was the result of all this? Well, it was January 6th. It was the fact that America had to go out and look for political prisoners to performatively imprison. They fought for freedom, the nightly vigil to sanctify the January 6th rioters. There are people sitting in prison on very, very, very long prison terms at this point who took a guided tour around the building. Well, it's very well covered.
I can point to one other thing Trump most certainly did. Galvanized the left in a way that has never been done really in America before, I don't think, maybe since Nixon.
Yes, he did galvanize the left in a way that was the most potent since Nixon. because they really had no answer to Reagan after the malaise of the of Le Peanut Farmer.
Yeah.
But yes, he did. He did galvanize the left in such a way that they were not only unworried about human rights violations, in quotes, with arbitrary detention, they were positively foaming at the mouth for it.
Yep.
In the response to, quote-unquote, the correction. We also have, you know, Owen Schreier here, sentenced to 60 days. Even though he didn't enter the Capitol building, he was simply on the Capitol grounds. They're having to go out of their way. America is so passive. The American people are so passive. They are so unwilling to do anything against the global American empire that they had to prosecute somebody who didn't even enter the building to make up the numbers for their political prisoners project. That is how failed the Trump administration is. The Trump administration was a failure.
Yes, and to be actually, I say this now as a sort of PSA. If you see either of us even begin to suggest the notion or even discuss lightly the idea of Trump being back in power, give us a slap.
Yeah.
Or we've been taken hostage.
The Trump administration accomplished nothing, and what little it did roll back was eliminated within its time frame. Its biggest legacy is empowering the ATF to redefine the definition of a firearm at will due to a backdoor deal due to, because of the Vegas shooting.
Yep.
That is the biggest outgrowth of the Trump administration, and it's one that has frustrated the Second Amendment community, as it were, for the past 5 years. So good on you for that. But yeah, they're just putting people in prison because Trump, and they can just do that because they are in charge and you are not. That is the end point of being a quote-unquote successful dissident West.
Yep.
Well done. You did it. so what are the lessons here then?
Well, there's one very simple lesson.
Yes.
Is that the levers of power go nowhere, especially when everyone that's behind the levers and inside the machine hates you.
That's what it is. You can nominally be at the head of the machine and you can have no control over it because it's not about positions. It's not about labels. It's about the who. Power is vested in people, no matter where they are, no matter if they are in office or not in office. The elite class is made up of people. And what the electoral process does in terms of the distant mind is it turns into a cargo cult. We think we can go through the rituals of democracy,
yes,
and bring about power, but it is a cargo cult because democracy doesn't bring about power. Power brings about power.
Yes, conspiracies bring about power. Conspiring amongst a group of decades as to how you're going to hijack a large part of a society through subterfuge, fusion, that's real power.
Yes. And then just imprisoning everyone who has a fart about on your Capitol grounds just because you need some political...
Power needs to be seen. Speaking of which...
I think the biggest example, because somebody did just come in from outside a British political party and said, we're going to take it over. The left puffed their own collective farts to such a degree that they thought they could take over the Labour Party. And all they did was make the establishment parts of it stronger. So you talked about the fact that Trump galvanised the left. Corbyn galvanised the Blairites.
Well,
he snapped them out of their malaise.
We could also relate this back to Bowden's original statements. The problem with Corbyn is not that he was a militant leftist. Is that he carried the aesthetics of being a militant leftist. When you are part of the right and part of the mainstream right, the only thing you have is aesthetics of being on the right. Being genuinely of the right becomes no use to you. And we can see the sort of the asymmetry there. That the left is full of radical ideas painted of managerialism. The right is managerialism painted as radical ideas, which means the dynamic doesn't work in the same way.
No, it doesn't. It does not work in the same way. This is the unchained left. This is arguably the woke left at the height of its power.
Yes.
the woke left, in quotes, at the height of its power, goes out and they'll go, we want Corbyn, we want magical, communism grandpa. And you have all of this, what becomes naked entryism, Labour entryist. This is from 2015. The left activist joining to back Corbyn as Labour faces allegations of entryism threatening its leadership contest. Channel 4 News hears from members of other parties who see Jeremy Corbyn is appealing to all parties. Left. Here's the basically him going out and having a rainbow coalition of the Green Party, or he's talking up Green Party talking point. Anyway, he was all things to all leftists. Labour is battling claims that Trotskyist, Green Party members and other socialist and left-wing parties are signing up to vote for Jeremy Corbyn in the leadership election, because they did.
I mean, there's an interesting character for you there that's quoted right in this article. There is enemies within the Labour Party. Small, it's ideological, it's fanatical. And guess what? That's the Blairites.
We're having some reports of audio issues, but I'm not hearing any on our feed. You might want to try refreshing. That might be on YouTube's end, I'm afraid. But I've been listening to our feed a little bit. You probably saw me doing that. And I'm not really hearing the audio cut at all, so I'll just double check that. But no, do let us know. It might just be on your end, because I've seen a couple of people say it, and I've seen people saying it's all good. Now, that's just YouTube. I will take this opportunity to say that YouTube is terrible.
Yes.
YouTube, we hate you. Let's continue.
We hate YouTube, but we love Israel.
Yes.
Aaron Pistachio Ice Cream, as the rat has taken to calling him here. Where is he now? Where are the Navarra media people now? They are so locked out of any of the even illusions of power or providence in Labour circles. They now have to put themselves forward as anti-wokists. Talk to people like Sargon.
Yes.
That's what Aaron Bastani does now, because Starmer and all his mates get rid of him.
It's very funny. Oh, you have like the Grey Zone people who are actually out there doing good work. I'd love to get some of those people on. It'd be so fried.
Probably not impossible.
I've emailed them a bunch of times. I never got a response. I have tried that. But no, this is what happened. He was their candidate. He was their great red hope.
Mm.
And he did massively, look at this, he massively increased the membership
numbers. Yeah.
The membership of the Labour Party. As you can see here with the 2016, 2018 numbers, it doesn't seem like a needle was moved. But Labour did massively increase its membership numbers. It changed the rules around membership. The leftist activists thought, right, this is our time. We're going to take over the Labour Party. The Conservatives have to lose power at some point. We're just going to have a communist or socialist regime. We're going to do it, guys. We'll do it. We'll just take over the Labour Party. And look at this. The entryism was massive. It was massive. They were right about the entryism.
I mean, it worked in the short-term sense, but let's think back to the previous example of UKIP.
Yeah.
We had all these people, all that energy, all that money, all these aggravated university students, and they expended all their energy on giving Keir Starmer a legitimate platform.
Yes. What happened is that he lost. Smash cut to today. Where is their revolution?
Well, I mean, for anyone who watched, and I know he did a kind of reaction thing to it at one point as well, the Future of Britain conference, where Starmer and Blair are sitting having a blather about what they had to do to make the Labour Party work. And the two of them basically sit there and look at each other and go, well, yes, of course we had to get all the idiots out of the party. We had to get all of these people who were all these radical, woke leftists, nonsense people. We had to get them out, and then we could rebuild. It's just so sort of naked and brazen how obvious they've made
The whole thing is that didn't move the needle at all, because people don't care. People don't care about leftist activists. They see them as punching bags. They hate them. You're meant to hate these people. And so when someone like Starmer comes out and says, yeah, what we did was all those people in our party, fuck them.
Yeah.
They're all a bunch of useless communists. They don't understand power. And it's true. They don't understand power. And you have, what is the result now that Starmer's in charge? Labour records first lead over S&P and Westminster for a decade, Paul finds. Ah, how did they manage that?
And you've got here as well, Momentum and Jeremy Corbyn took over the Labour Party to only achieve own self-immolation. Utter routing by the establishment, bolstering the return of the Blairites in the process, seeing Starmer surge in the victory. The final humiliation of Corbyn was his removal from the party itself. Nothing of his revolution remains because his supporters, just like those who call for the takeover of the Tory party, do not understand where power was vested, how the process itself is a facade. And I would actually expect us to go further. I would imagine in the run-up to the next election, we might see some scandals about Diane Abbott. And who's the black one that said, I can't see any policeman, was a policeman standing behind him? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if these Joker and these sort of like Corbyn era clowns aren't scandaled out.
How did they get rid of Corbyn? They got rid of him.
Oh, because he was an anti-Semite.
Let's hear one more time. Since we haven't done our affirmation today, we'll let Mr. Farage do our affirmation for us.
It's not complicated, guys.
You may think it's complicated, but be clear. A sovereign state of Israel has been attacked. War has broken out. For decency, we must stand 100% with Israel.
Oof, sorry, we had to balance out having a dirty, dirty anti-Semitic Jeremy Corbyn on screen with Mr. Farage's beautiful affirmations there. Our daily affirmation.
A strong friend of the people of Israel.
A strong friend of the people of Israel, yes. But this is where we got to. Jeremy Corbyn was the great left hope. They poured all his energy, they poured all their energy into him. They spent probably almost like a decade's worth of political capital by a huge amount of what would be the quote-unquote student left, as we consider it, and it went nowhere. All they did was bash their head against the wall. And until they ended up making the wall somehow stronger. It's so terrible. He's not even an MP. He won't even come out against them. And Labour even has a policy in the works to ban people from even endorsing Jeremy Corbyn as a person within the Labour Party. Not only is Jeremy Corbyn no longer an MP, he is no longer allowed to be referred to in a positive light within the Labour Party. That is how badly they lost. That is how badly they lost this. That is the result of all of this entry. Oops, no, Nigel. No, we can't stand more affirmations. That is the result here.
You're not suggesting we could love Israel too much, are you?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that at all. I want to keep the stream in a timely fashion. The lesson here is that extreme entryism, even when backed by the collective will of the activist class, powerful NGOs, left-wing intellectuals, can be survived and even turned to the establishment favour. Corbyn is now a byword for defeat. You do not take over a large party. It takes over you. Yes. I remember the first comment we got on stream before Corbyn on air was, in globalist country, party take over you.
Yes. I mean, let's stress the point here as well. It's 2024, post-Starmer election. The Conservative Party is actually on the brink of collapse.
Yes.
The folk at Legatum with their billions of pounds, people from the Murdoch groups with all their media ties, genuinely get to a point where, like, no, we aren't doing the Tory party anymore. We're doing something else. By having, no matter how many number it is, let's say it's even a couple of hundred activists join up to the Tory party, describing themselves as being part of the radical right, that would maybe be the only thing in that situation lead to its revival, is giving some sort of centrist figure within the party the opportunity to smash the far right in their own midst.
Yes.
As legitimacy.
That's what it would do. That the revival of Starmer and Blairitism would be the result of attempting to have Nigel Farage as a Conservative Prime Minister.
David Cameronism.
Yes, even if he was to take over as the leader of the opposition, they would performatively do away with him in the same way that they would do away with Corbyn. And if they didn't, he would turn out like either Theresa May or Boris Johnson, which they'd nix him the week he gets into power with a big crisis, or he would simply turn out to have never been our guy.
Yep.
And really, that is why you can't take over the Tory party. We have some, I guess, a bit more theory-based stuff. I don't really have any slides for this. It's just stuff I wrote down. But there's also the fact that this does play into the failure of Brexit. It plays into some of the kind of weird populism stuff that happened in the wake of Brexit that was complete death. It plays into this, we have to save GB News, we have to save Boris and Farage. They're doing it again. They're doing it again. This interlocks perfectly. It's in the zeitgeist. And that's why I don't blame, you know, Carl Soli for this. This is in the soup. This is being suggested to people over and over and over and over and over again. That Boris is going to come back. Farage is going to come back. There's going to be a great populist centre-right uprising.
Lawrence Fox and Calvin Robinson and Richard Tice and all these people are all going to get together and smash the establishment. They'll rout the wokists out.
It's just, it's complete delusion and will lead to the same kind of waste of energy. You have to think about how much energy was put into Jeremy Corbyn by very well-funded. Think of how strong the student left are in parts of Britain. Think about how strong the
Muslim lobby that stood behind them.
The Muslim lobby that stood behind them was. Think about how strong some of the NGOs and some of like the climate activist groups that played into his agenda, and they were still overcome. We would have to invest, if we were to actually try to take over the Tory, all of our energy, it would have to be our sole focus for years, possibly even decades, and at the end of it, we would have nothing. It would be our ruin, just like making Brexit the only thing was the ruin of the British right from 2015 to 2020. All we got was massive increases of immigration and a parade of conservative leaders who did their best to sell Britain down the river while they were still in power. That is the fruit of saving Brexit. That is the fruit of base Boris. That is the fruit of UKIP. That is the fruit of all of this delusional populism. And that brings me to kind of my final point, which is the fact that all of this just leans into the myths of history. The idea itself is steeped in the myths of democracy and populism, as we are ideas we are supposed to have moved past. In a modern managerial state, power is vested in the vast, lumbering bureaucracy, and you cannot rule directly. Instead, those in power focus on setting up bodies like Ofcom, we've talked about before, to set the very parameters of the machine of state. These bodies were welcomed and embraced by the power structure as they gave the bureaucracy more power to manage. Any attempt to reform or deviate is ruthlessly dealt with, a la the wrong winner Liz Truss, or just the bypassing of Donald Trump. Corbyn managed to quote-unquote take over the Labour Party, but he was never in power nor in charge. Even if he was elected, he would not be in power. To say so is a fantasy. It bows down to the myth that the process of politics is neutral and fair, and that those in power will simply recognise they are beaten and go home. I think that's really the core myth here. Because as we've talked about before, the security state sits behind all of this. If you've not seen them before, I recommend you look up our White March stream and our stream Prism Leaks. Because this is official Five Eyes GCHQ policy.
When they have been bested.
Yes.
When they have been truly shown as people who have done wrong, they switch to hard power. And all of a sudden, in something like a corruption or paedophilia trial, 120-odd witnesses held over the space of a decade.
Yes.
And that's what happens.
That's what happened with the White March. Go and look our stream up. All of this was revealed in terms of the capability and the will by the Prism leaks. This is an official slide from a GCHQ presentation. Set up a honey trap. Change the name, change the photos and social media networking sites. Write a blog purporting to be one of their victims. Email, text their colleagues, neighbors, friends, etc. They will just destroy you because they are in power and you are not. We have explained this so many times. That is the end point. If you jump through all the hurdles, if you take over a political party, if you get through an election, if you survive your first month in power, what happens is the security state that you're attempting to reform either kills you or discredits you to such a degree you wish they would have.
Yep. And the point you've got here, which is something that I know I use as my starting point, I know you use it as your starting point, and many of the people that we've discussed things with over the last couple of years in this channel or with other people and other ideas have all been centered around the notion that democracy is a lie. There is no electoral solution. If you base your vision on the myths of liberal democracy, then you're doomed to repeat all the follies of the past of the post-19th century British politics led us to our current and fallen position. We can back round to Bowden's assessment of conservatism that it is too obsessed with respectability. Taking over the Tory party is attempting to borrow its legitimacy, its respectability, by wearing its ill-fitting skin. We need a foundation, not clambering over someone else's shoddy rubble pile only to be shot for looting. I will do many things for our cause, but one thing I will not do, and say it with me, chat, is join the Tory party. I will not join the Tory party. I will not join the Tory party. Write it on the blackboard 100 times.
Jay, question in chat, I'm afraid my answer is going to be quite dark here. It says, I don't get the change their photos part on social media. What does that accomplish? What photos would they think about it? What photos would they be changing your photos and social media to?
Yes.
I'll put it this way. It's margarita, guys. It's a margarita pizza. What's on a margarita pizza? It's cheese. anyway, that's enough of that. I guess we can do it.
Yes, work. I can see in the chat. I will not join the Tory party.
I will not join. I see your affirmations. If you like our content, there will be quite a large written piece coming out at some point, either this week or next week, about the education system, because I believe I finally got that done. It's nearly 10,000 words.
That might be a week or two if I'm editing that.
I've already got someone else to look at it, so okay. we'll see though. That's why it might be next week. I'll let you have a look over it. But yes, there will be some more stuff coming on Substack page. That's antipolitics.substack.com. You can also look at a roundup of some of our practical content when I did the "You Don't Want Practical Solutions," which I will admit to be a little bit of a bait post.
To be fair, I've had
a bit of a kick up the arse.
Yeah, I've had a couple of people say to me, "Well, this isn't for me," and you're right, it's not.
that's all there is really to it. Like I said, if you guys want to support us, there's many ways to do it, but we don't know how consistent we can be.
Where can we find that GCHQ slide? Go watch our stream on Prism, or Through a Prism Darkly. Is one of your more expansive pet projects, that was.
Oh yeah, that was a very, very big stream.
I think we also covered some of the similar issues in a stream referred to as social media is fake and gay.
Yes, Mulatto Ultra, look up GCHQ slide Prism Leaks, and it should come up if you Google that. But it was literally just part of the Prism Leaks. And we cover the Prism Leaks in detail in our Through a Prism Darkly stream. So I'll possibly link that in the description or something. I don't want to sit here and go through it now. But yes, that's where that comes from. Apart from that,
stay safe, never relax, and don't join the Tory party.
Do not join the Tory party, guys. It is not worth it. Anyway, I will leave you in the capable hands of the zone here. It's our little stalker outro slide. But anyway, you guys have a good evening and good night.
Good night. Go to the pub.